It was basically saying that, you know, that life can still happen within Thai traditional churches. And that kind of caught my attention because God's always given me a real heart for our Church of Scotland. But we know a lot of our churches are tired, especially post-COVID. And I didn't like that there's always a narrative of decline and, oh, the Church of Scotland. And I don't see it like that. I believe God can do a new thing anywhere and everywhere. So when I was hearing Scott and Martin Fair talking about Eva, it really kind of excited me because as a Church of Scotland minister, I've always had a real missional heart. And what Scott and Martin were sharing was that this potentially was giving me a missional and theological framework for what I was doing. So I went along to that leadership day and we just loved it. We just thought this is exactly what we're trying to do in both our churches.
I feel more equipped to begin to explore certain ideas, certain needs, certain issues than I've ever done prior to now through the Eva course. And I'm really thankful for that. It's been such a blessing.
Well, welcome back to Emerging Emmaus. We've had a wee summer time and we hope you've been able to get a break yourselves. And you're tuning in to Emerging Emmaus with Lindsay Brennan and Scott Burton today. It's a pleasure to have you with us. And we're discussing some input into your life and ministry and church's life and ministry and mission that has been tremendously inspiring for you, which I'm sure will be infectious and encouraging to all of us listening in. And it's IWA, but it's pronounced Eva, and it's not a girl, it's a bird. Is that right? So tell us who Eva is, or what Eva is, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, so Eva is a growing network of folks started in the States and then came down into England through the HDB network, and then
Holy Trinity Brompton.
Yes, yeah. Holy Trinity Brompton, and from there, word got spread up into Scotland, and I heard about it through Martin Fair. And he was the prompt to get involved with Eva, and Eva is drawn upon that image of the Hawaiian bird, which soars high to kind of view the landscape, but then comes down to land and to nest in the local situation, and that gives a bit of an image of what Eva looks to do for leaders and with leaders, to give that space and time away and to be invested in and have that high up view, and then come down and bring what you've received into your local context, I think is what I've heard, and try to remember off the cuff a little bit there, Neil.
No, that's cool. That's good. We're all well into off the cuff. And maybe Lindsay, you could tell us a wee bit about how you get drawn into it. And has it been that higher, seeing the wood for the trees experience, as well as the down to earth, getting your hands dirty? It's not just for you as a minister, it's for your congregations. Is that right? Or your congregation?
Yeah, nice to see you, Neil. I've been enjoying your podcast. Good that you're back. So I was on Facebook, probably spent too much time there, but I saw a video that Scott and Martin had produced talking about Eva. So it's Eva Remissioning Collaborative. And they were really telling the Church of Scotland ministers about a leadership day that was happening in Glasgow last year. And it was something along the lines of how to remission the traditional church. So is your church tired? You know, and it was basically saying that, you know, that life can still happen within Thai traditional churches. And that kind of caught my attention because God's always given me a real heart for our Church of Scotland. But we know a lot of our churches are tired, especially post-COVID. And I didn't like that there's always a narrative of decline and, oh, the Church of Scotland. And I don't see it like that. I believe God can do a new thing anywhere and everywhere. So when I was hearing Scott and Martin Fair talking about Eva, it really kind of excited me because as a Church of Scotland minister, I've always had a real missional heart. And what Scott and Martin were sharing was that this potentially was a giving me a missional and theological framework for what I was doing. And any encouragement and support in doing ministry and doing mission would be good. So I went along to that leadership day. Scott was there and some of the team from Eva, some of the people from America were there. And I took some of my leaders from both my churches at St. Paul's in Mulgay and Balduinic. And we just loved it. We just thought this is exactly what we're trying to do in both our churches. And both my churches said if there was a course to go on, then I should try and get on it, which I did. So I did. I started the course in January. I think, Scott, you're ahead of me, aren't you?
Yeah, so I heard about it just before summer last year, 2024, via Martin, and then spent some of my study leave looking at some of the material that has influenced the course. We can talk about that at some stage if you want. And then I started the collective in September last year, and it ran through to May this year. So I'm a wee bit ahead in that sense, I guess.
I finish in October. So I think we've got a couple of days in London where I physically get to see the people I've been journeying with. So how it works is it's 1 hour every week on a Tuesday I meet, and it's church leaders across England, America. In my batch, there is a lot of Church of England ministers, but we haven't physically met. So we're learning together for 1 hour a week. And we're sharing the journey of remissioning together. And that's been really life-giving because I said to Scott, I found my people. So I found people that,
Tribe, right?
yeah, it's good though. It's like it's kind of really given me so much encouragement that what I'm doing is good and God-honoring. And it's good to hear other people's challenges and struggles as they try and do mission within their churches and learning from each other as well, because we're all in different denominations as well. But I haven't actually physically seen these people yet, so I'm kind of looking forward to actually, online is great, but it's nice to see people in person.
So tell us a bit about what's been involved and how it's been helping you to look from that bigger perspective and yet together with your people, getting on with things on the ground.
So I think each week, well, there's 25 kind of sessions across the year broadly, and each week you've got a wee bit reading to do. That probably takes about half an hour, and there's also space on an online document to share some reflections around that, where that's kind of connecting for you and for your leadership and ministry, and what you might do with that kind of going forward. And then you have your weekly hour meeting, maybe an hour and 15 in some weeks, where you're able to kind of share that and reflect on that with each other. And the coaches will be there to prod some questions, get you thinking that wee bit deeper, which I've always found really helpful in stretching. And I think I'm sure most of us know of the benefit of that regularity and of coming together with others and not just having to do it on your own, which I found really helpful because there are parts of the course that I have picked up or read in other resources. Whether that's at the start of the course where you are looking at the internal life, your own internal life, your rule of life. Bits and pieces are in there. And I've read that in loads of places, but actually being able to come back to that and to weave it into a wider structure that takes you into looking at church life and mission, I've found that really helpful. But then do go on to look at beyond the life of the minister or pastor, and into church life. And there's some key facets of the course, key competencies as they call them, that they get you to look at. But partway through the course, about halfway through, they get you to do like a short paper just to say, well, where do you begin to think this will take you in the next year or 6 months even? And then at the end, they ask you to write a bit of a longer term plan, pathway of where you'll take things with no pressure to conform to anybody else or a particular example. And so you ground it very much in your own reality. And as you go through the course, there's obviously the opportunity to pick up some of the material from that week to begin talking about it with your congregation too, with your Kirk session, maybe with your office bearers and team conveners, depending on how you're structured. But there is also more in the course than you could ever do week by week or in that first year. So currently, I have loosely a plan for about 18 months. And we won't embed everything from the course in that time, but I feel more equipped than I'd ever done before now. I'm coming up for 7 years in January 26, a year into a four-way union, just about. And as I said to people on Sunday, the last 7 years have all been guesswork. Which they did laugh at as well, Neil.
As I know it's true.
Yeah, not true. So it's been slightly chaotic. And whilst I don't have the answers, because none of us do really, I feel more equipped to begin to explore certain ideas, certain needs, certain issues than I've ever done prior to now through the EVA course. And I'm really thankful for that. It's been such a blessing.
I'm sure your folk have been encouraged in that as well, and your honesty too, and your humility. And you, Lindsay, tell us a wee bit about how it's been helping you to lead your people to join with your people in accountability. I'm hearing that as a strong part of what you were talking about there, Scott. You've appreciated the accountability that gets you to really focus and intently listen. You know, the word obedience comes from the Latin word ob, audience, which literally means listen intently. And that's what you've been enabled to do, I think, both individually and as a congregation. So tell us about this listening and obedience, Lindsay, for yourselves.
Yeah, I mean, what I was really drawn to in the material and also in Josh Hayden's book, who is one of the founders of EVA, is it's all based on what we know to be true: repentance, submission to Christ. And in the beginning of the course, it really does outline that remissioning starts with the leader. Do you know, quite often we can easily see, oh, well, this is wrong with the organization and this needs change in the organization and the organization is stuck here. But if, you know, the leader has to be healthy. Just that focus on the inner life, which Scott was talking about there. Yeah, we've all read about it in other books like Pete Scazzaro's Emotionally Healthy Leader book and things like that. But it's just really important that you're staying aligned to Christ and doing all the things that you know that keep you good and healthy, because you can only lead well if you're keeping well yourself. And it made me reflect on I was at the General Assembly this year, and it was, I can't remember the statistic, but it was how many ministers don't take their day off, how many ministers don't take their annual leave, how many ministers haven't actually looked on the Ascend resources that the Church of Scotland have, which are amazing, that you can get spiritual direction, you can get coaching in your ministry, you can get pastoral supervision. And you know, it's all those things that keep us healthy as leaders. So I think the accountability thing is crucial for doing any remissioning work in the church. So I think just that reminder for me was really important. I've just loved everything. I mean, this is mission is in my blood. So this is just been the course for me. I always go as far as saying I've got 3 degrees in lots of different things.
And
This is
that's not a singing group, is it?
no, no, no. No, but this is by far the best thing I've ever studied. So I'm really keen that other Church of Scotland ministers have a think about doing it. There was a quote in the material that says, "Conceptually stuck systems cannot become unstuck by simply trying harder." And that really resonated with me because you can see within our churches sometimes, well, we'll just do this next program and we'll just do this course and then we'll get the result. And sometimes we have to sit back and say, well, actually, we've been doing this thing for 20, 30 years and it hasn't really borne much fruit for the kingdom of God. So let's stop.
Someone
And we're quite.
described it as, or asked the question, when's the best time to get off a dead horse? And often it's not, we don't get off it until way down the line.
No, it's also like sometimes some things we're doing in the church are bearing fruit, but there was an image in the material. But every year you would prune your rose bushes that were still blossoming lovely flowers, but you prune them to bear even more fruit. There's a term which was new to me. I'm sure it's not a new term for lots of people, but creative destruction. So sometimes ending something to give life to something new. It's been for me, the course has given me some tools and some words and some language to use with my people, with my leaders, to help them understand why we're trying new things, why we might be stopping certain things. Like Scott was saying, in my first 5 years, a new mission was in my blood and I was trying to do my best, but you didn't really have any kind of framework or roadmap. And I think this has just given me something to hang the ministry and mission on a bit better and to help me keep people with me.
And I've read your report for your study leave, and it's great that one can use study leave resources to do this course and connect in this way. I read in your report you talk about the frameworks, the tools that you've described, which have helped you lead with greater wisdom, care, and intention. You're in your second charge. There's things you've been able to reflect on and experience and learn to do things. And is it learning to do things in a different way, or what's been the wisdom? Can you distill some of that wisdom and learning?
I think for me personally, it's like in the ministry journey, we are training to be ministers. And I often felt, we were going away like to St. Andrews and learning all these amazing things with all the other student ministers. And we were growing in our spiritual formation. And, our partners were left behind quite often because they weren't part of it. And sometimes it can be like that for leaders, that we're learning all this good stuff, but we're leaving our people behind. So I would say Eva's really good at helping you and giving you tools to actually listen to people well, to hear their stories, to celebrate the past, but to help people not stay in the past, to move them forward. So there's a big part of it about, when you're bringing in change, it's going to lead to people feeling fearful and people being scared. So that can lead to sometimes some difficult behaviors. So there's a massive big part in it in how to do conflict well, and how conflict isn't a bad thing. It can be a really healthy thing. So it just helps you during. It just gives you some tools to deal to cope with some of the harder things. But the main learning for me is how to keep people with you so that they're growing with you. You're not accelerating off in your learning and not keeping you the body of Christ with you.
I think that's one of the things that does come across in the course is that there's a clarity that you cannot do this yourself, and you cannot lead your church through a remissioning process yourself, and actually that would be to the detriment of the church anyway if you did do it yourself. So, and with that, so then every week there's things that you could be taken back to share with your Kirk session or with your congregation to look at, well, in our meetings, how can we encourage discipleship even in our meetings, and use that as an opportunity for growth and for development and coming back to kind of core purposes and bits and pieces. We've been doing pieces of work this past year that have come out of the course, but also the books that have influenced some of the material in the course, and it has taken us that long to do some of that work, and there's no way that I could have done it on my own, and so people have come in, and in doing that, they've been more equipped for remissioning, and it has changed their heart and their attitude to themselves, to one another, to the community, to what God wants us to do. And so yeah, it begins with the leader, but if you hear and engage well with what you're invited into through the course, then very much it has to ripple out, or it won't bring the depth of change that I think we all want to see. So completely echo what Lindsay's saying there about bringing people with you. If you engage well with the material.
I'll give you a good example of how that you have a lovely moment when you realize that people are getting where you're going. So there's a chapter in the leadership course called Burying Preferences. So sometimes we do things in church not because we like it, but because we know it might grow the kingdom of God. So for example, in my bigger church at St. Paul's, we have a beautiful traditional service on a Sunday morning. We've got a fine organist, Derek Novel, who is just outstandingly good at playing the organ, and we love our traditional service, but we know that we're not reaching a lot of the young Christian families that are in our community. We also know that a lot of Christians like more contemporary worship with praise band. They like more an unstructured service, so we are experimenting with putting on an evening service once a month called The Way. Because in Mogae, we're at the start of the West Highland Way, which I haven't done yet, but I want to do it. And we're playing on the words there because the early followers of Jesus were called followers of the way. So we're burying our preference for traditional worship, but providing a completely different service in the hope to reach out to people that we don't yet know, and providing exceptional hospitality with donuts and hot chocolate and all that. And there's a lovely guy in my choir who told me when he first heard about it, there's no way I'm going to that. Our traditional service is perfect the way it is. And if people don't like it, then they can just go somewhere else. And then we had a lovely walk together, and I've been telling him a little bit about the course and so on. And he finally got it that he doesn't have to enjoy it, but we're doing things, we're burying our own preferences, our own likes, for the benefit of the kingdom of God. And the nicest thing that's happened to me in the ministry since I've been here was him saying to me, "I'm coming. I might not enjoy it, but I'm coming. I'm going to come, and I'm going to welcome the people that come, because we're hosting this. So I'm going to come." And he did. And he's going to come on Sunday night when we do the next one. So that's just a wee example.
Wonderful, dying to self and rising to Christ.
And that's a key principle that we kept coming back to as a cohort, was that gospel principle that life only comes after death. But life can come for any of us and for any of our congregations. And so I was sharing a bit of that on Sunday. This term is a real term where we're hoping to see a kind of key change for us as a congregation, drawn upon some of the material, because I've told them that I'm doing the course and I've invited them to do some of the outworking of that. But obviously, I needed to journey through the course and share things with the elders before I was able to share it more widely. And know that this wasn't just another random Scott idea. But something that really we were on the same page as a Kirk session, and we are. And so we've begun some teaching, and so Sunday's message on the 24th of August was about that: will we die or die out? That is our question. That is our choice. Will we die to self? Will we take up our cross and follow Jesus, come what may? Or if we don't want to do that, then we die out. And I'm saying that to a big congregation in Church of Scotland terms. I'm told that about the average size of our congregations in the C of S just now on a Sunday morning is what, 45, and maybe even less than that on an average. So I have something like about 150, and that's nothing to do with me. That's very much inherited. But I got folks to stand and then sit if they were in a certain age category, and that shocked my congregation because they had not seen the reality of how top heavy we were in the upper generations. And if we want to see a legacy passed on, then we're going to need to really do some change and go on a journey of change. And I think what's beautiful about the course is that it can lead us to lots of different conclusions or different activities at different times and seasons. So for Lindsay, it's starting a new type of service with different music and making space for that and collaborating with others in the area. For us, it has been part of it is undertaking a community audit, a missional listening activity with Cinnamon Network. And these are old terms. Like I heard of this like 20 years ago, so it's not new stuff, but it's weaving it within a whole fabric of ideas and principles that we need to come back to, because it's not just enough to do the community audit. You also need to know, well, what are the kind of disciples that we want to form? And if you haven't nailed that down, if you don't know what that is, if you don't know the kind of stories that people are going to tell out of your investment of discipleship, then you haven't done the work yet. And that took my folks 8 months to do that work of what's the pathway we want to take people on through their discipleship, just to figure out the language. It's taken us 6 months already to do the audit. But you need both, and it's not either or. So these have been things that we've had to invest in, and even then, that's only the beginning of the plan, the pathway. We'll come together at the end of October for a conference, and we're going to look at some of ourselves and some of the hopes and the dreams, the fears, the worries, the history, the here and now, and getting and so bringing that all together gives us a sense of, well, here's who we are and here's who we've been and here's who we'd love to be, but here are also the needs of the community. And so where are we going to change, and what's that going to stop? What preferences are we going to bury? What ministries are we going to bury to make space for that? So there's, for us, there's a whole confluence of things. And I think one of the things in the material and in the reading, one of the books is Centering Discipleship. And it's an age-old question. I'm sure I've heard preachers mention it before, but if your church was suddenly to shut tomorrow, would your community notice or care? And even with a really big congregation, I'm actually not sure that my community would care. They would notice. But the things that they would notice missing, they would probably quite quickly fill in with other things. My big congregation is not nearly as incarnational as we need to be. And so we are declining and aging. And 96% of my parish has no connection with church. We need to see that change. Like any church, that's across denominations in my parish, 96% have no connection.
You're both involved in congregations that are reasonably large in terms of, Church of Scotland terms. You both have a passion for the gospel, the good news of Jesus, and sharing it. I suspect you're both evangelists.
I'm not.
You're not an evangelist.
No.
Lindsay's an evangelist. Scott's a teacher.
Teacher apostle, if you're using APES.
Also, yes. So
Evangelist, prophet.
what about the teacher pastors? What about the people who are in rural communities who have got those congregations where maybe 10, 15, 20 meeting? They've not got the same number of folk for ministries, probably largely elderly. What about the people who maybe are not of a similar theological perspective? Is this a course that is accessible for a wide variety of people in the Church of Scotland?
I would say 100%, very much so. We had people on our cohort who were a completely different place from me, in terms of geography, demographics, theology, and the principles are there's biblical principles, but there's also wisdom from a lot of different writing and sources. And these principles can be woven into any locality, I believe. Although I'm in a big church, clearly I've seen other things, having been a locum before this, up north in rural settings, I could see these principles being worked out there. And in some ways, they were working them out just naturally. It's just what they did. But there would be other things that I can see they've not got onto yet, and hopefully they have in the time since I've been with them, and under their new leadership and ministry. But yeah, very much so. These are not principles that are required to be worked out with a particular theological framework or a particular makeup of church, but it will lead to different answers, and that's the beauty of it. It's about equipping you for your own situations. All of us need to know our communities. And m many times in a rural setting or in a smaller setting, we probably know our communities better than urban settings where we don't talk to our neighbours, and we've lost the art of neighbouring. And that's what we probably will lean into more. But I'm not trying to give the answers. I've resisted that very much in the last 7 years of giving answers. And with the course, it's not about giving answers. It's about, well, what's the conversations that we need to have? And that's a conversation for every size of congregation and then for every theological makeup of congregation. And this course will give you those pointers to here are some of the key questions that we need to be asking and talking through together.
Yeah, the thing that Scott and I kind of identified as quite similar between our congregations is that we've got, well, and one of my churches is a large church, but made up of predominantly older adults. And the pastoral needs, when you've got a congregation of 180 or so of people in that age demographic, the pastoral needs are high. There's always a lot of funerals, there's always a lot of hospital visits, and you want to pastorally care for the church that's looked after the church all their days, you know, they've worked tirelessly. I just think the generations above Scott and I have a massive servant heart, and they've been done a power of work for their church, and we want to care for them and look after them well in their older age. And how do you do that? How do you do that as a minister when you've got also to do the work of remissioning, because that this work is essential for new life in Jesus' name. So we were having a conversation just about the importance of having a really robust pastoral care team. So equipping the pastors, equipping the people in your congregation with really good pastoral care gifts to help you look after people. And in both our churches, money has been put, any extra money has been put towards hiring a pastoral assistant to support us in our ministries so that we can be released to lead and to do the mission work. Because I think it's very, very difficult for one person to do all that. So, you know, coming back to that APEST team thing, really important that you build a team round about you, because it's absolutely impossible to do all of it on your own, and we're not supposed to do it on our own. My second church is a little rural church in Balearnock, and I've never met a church that knows its community so well. So when they talk about doing pastoral care, it's never just to the church, it's always to the wider parish. So some of the principles in this course are going really well there, because they kind of really understand what it means to know your neighbour, because they really do know their neighbour, and it's building on those connections. So.
And I guess if, like thinking about the those that would be more inclined to describe themselves, see themselves in a more pastor teacher model, or pastor is high up on their kind of makeup, alongside maybe prophet or evangelist. I would think they would just approach it in a different way. But I think all of us probably see that we still need to to approach the issues still, I would hope. I don't think it's just the evangelist prophets that apostles that kind of see that, because we know we're largely declining, but they'll approach it with a different heart. I sometimes envy the pastors and how much they care, and I've got a different relationship with my congregation than they will have, and I for a long time have beaten myself up about that. And it wasn't until I came across APAIST and found the language there that I thought that I realized who I was and the ministry I was to have. But the principles are not dependent upon being an evangelist or a prophet or an apostle or whatnot. They are principles of all of us. And the course again encourages that wider body sharing of the process. And so who are the voices that you need to include in the room? So if you're not X, then can you bring X into the conversation? How can you delegate this to other people? So there are bits of this process that I've had a very light touch on because other people have led and I've been looked in, and then they bring it back and they contribute to the process. I don't have to do it all, even though I'm the one that's done the course. So I think there's space for everybody.
Yeah, that's great. And is it a UK thing that you're involved with? Do you meet with people from England and Wales and other parts of the UK?
Mine's was all UK based.
I'm interested in regards to, what's happening in the UK. We've had a podcast in the Quiet Revival, the English and Welsh Bible Society, have done their survey, and we are certainly in down south hearing more about, I think, younger people coming to faith and intrigued and interested in faith. Justin Brierley, we've had a podcast with him about the rebirth of belief in God, talking about a tide coming in. Have you, in listening to your brothers and sisters across the UK and to each other in Scotland, been sensing something happening?
There are pockets of that. So I was talking to one of the young guys that came was coming out the front door on Sunday. I was like, I finally learned his name. I'm not always great with names. So I was like, "Hey, Jamie," and so we got talking. I was like, "What's brought you here?" Because he never stays for tea and coffee. Hasn't quite made that step yet. The daunting of going through for tea and coffee. So we had a wee bit play that, and so he's been coming for about a month. He's been a couple of times now, and no one has invited him. I was like, "What brought you in?" Social media. I was like, all right, okay. So it is, there's little bits of it. And likewise, we had a young person, Joseph, about 2 years ago now, high school age, just came in. He asked to come to church. And so he came the first week with his family. The next week, it was like him and one parent. And then the next week, it was just him. And so he's come. But these are just a few. I'm not sure we're necessarily seeing the numbers that others are, but there's at least two from Gen Z that are engaging, in that kind of exploration. But I don't want to give up on the others between 25 to 65 that we just don't see coming through the door. So how can we go to them? And that's, well, I guess I'm in part I've been equipped a little bit to explore. Don't have answers, don't have exact concrete plans on that yet, but more equipped to explore.
Not a huge notice. I guess we're going to have our third adult baptism in 2 weeks' time, and that's of a young girl who's 17. The two others that were baptized were in their 40s and 50s. I think what we're kind of noticing a pattern of in St. Paul's is people that have been away from the faith for quite a while, suddenly being reawoken back to come back to their church. Which I've been praying about, and noticing. And it kind of made me think to do something like a back, and the old back to church Sunday services, and where you can renew your vows. But it's just lovely when people walk back through the doors again, because it's always lovely to welcome. But I was saying to my church, that's why we're ex doing some of the alternative services that might be out of our comfort zone, to do a service which maybe speaks more to the younger generation. It's still early days of our evening service that is different, but at the first, the way we had 160 people, and the spread of the age groups was really, really good. So we had a lot of young families together worshiping. We had way more children at that service than we did in the morning, and we had the generations that we weren't seeing in the morning. So it's just interesting. But yeah, I'm dead excited about hearing about what's happening with the young people. Just really pray for a bit of a revival within our own churches as well.
And have you have you know have the has the research been borne out with the some of the stories you've heard from your colleagues that you've been journeying with from other parts of the UK?
Some of them are in a different scenario. So the people that I was with in my cohort, a number of them were in more kind of church planting, church revitalization kind of work through the Holy Trinity Brompton network. And so they were working in estates, as they would call them, and some of them have been further along the journey. So my cohort leaders have been doing this for maybe 4 or 5 years, so they're further along, and so seen more fruit off the back of that, having followed that through for a longer period of time. For the other two that were on my course, they were very new into their situations, and so we're still kind of getting to grips with things, and so probably didn't have a lot of kind of stories featuring from kind of quiet revival dynamics, but due to the makeup, the intentionality, the incarnational dynamics of their locale and their setup, they would probably have a greater spread of ages and generations than just folks in the upper generation. So it's I didn't hear an awful lot of stories from them specifically on that.
Tell us a bit about how folk can plug into Eva.
Well,
What's happening?
there's a leadership course happening on the 1st of October, which I believe is a Wednesday in Edinburgh at the Quaker House. I know a lot of the Eva coaches are going to be at that, and a lot of people that have been doing the course are going to be at that. I've been trying to plug that with within the Church of Scotland, because I just think it'll be a really good thing to attend. So I'm going along to that, and I think Scott, you're going to be there. I'm then going straight away from that the next day to London to finish my course. So my course finishes in October. But yeah, I think as a taster would be the day in Edinburgh. Josh Hayden also has a book called Remissioning Church, A Field Guide to Bringing a Congregation Back to Life. It is kind of condensed material that's in the course. Great to read the book, but I think what's benefited me is journeying with other people, hearing people apply this stuff in their own context. And in my cohort, we've got someone in the Assemblies of God. We've got someone who's in a Holy Trinity Brompton plant, and we've got two Church of England ministers. So we're all completely different. I'm the only Church of Scotland. But Scott and I have a lovely vision of having a growing network of people within the Church of Scotland doing this, so that we can be coaching and supporting and enabling each other. Because remissioning work is really hard. Josh spells that out in his book. You know, there's nothing easy about it. But knowing you've got people that are also doing what you're doing just helps. So we would love to see more people within the Church of Scotland giving it a go, because it just gives you a framework for what we're supposed to be doing anyway. I think if I had this framework in my first 5 years in ministry, maybe there might have been some mistakes I wouldn't have made. if I'm being really brutally honest. But Hindsight's a great thing. But yeah, just having tools to help you on the way is really helpful.
And when does the course start?
The next course, I think, begins in September, but then they'll have one that begins in January as well. So there's those two options. Folks might be quite intimidated by the cost, and that is something that I know the network is looking to try and do something about. So it is quite a steep cost. I had applied to trusts to get some money for that, and I've got some money to do the 201 course as well. But there might be other funds that people can tap into that would equip them to be able to get to that, and to be part of it. But at least maybe come in for the day in Edinburgh would be a start. Picking up the books, but I think as Lindsay said, it's great to read Remissioning by Josh, Remission in Church. It's great to read Centering Discipleship by Ewan Strouser, but just having that space and time, where you have that, as you talked about, Neil, at the start, that gentle accountability, not that heavy-handed accountability that none of us want to go near, but just that space of coming back or saying, yeah, I have done the reading because I know I had to get it done, and I've done the questions, so I've begun to think about it. But then someone just giving you that wee nudge to stretch you has been really helpful. And then that discipline at the end of it of saying, well, what are you going to do with it? Where are you going to take that? That has been helpful. We have found that in other discipleship models and vehicles that we've brought in to life here in the Upper Braes, that gentle accountability that has been a real blessing. So, but start with maybe coming to the day on the 1st of October, picking up the books, but give serious consideration to try and get on the course would be a real help for so many, I think.
And can you plug into the day in Edinburgh via internet, or you got to be there?
You've got to be there, unfortunately. Now
Yeah, okay.
they have done some kind of information sessions before online. There's none scheduled just now, I believe. If that is of interest, then people could obviously reach out to me or Lindsay, and we could take that back to Eva and see if there's scope for that. They have done like online kind of sessions in other contexts, but they've not really done that here yet. So it'd be kind of international, probably be stretching with folks in America, folks in England, folks here. So the timing could be an interesting dynamic, fitting that in.
Well, it's been fantastic hearing you, and I'm sure many are encouraged to further consider this particular way, and if not this way, some other way, to Eva. And I mean, I remember I've been here in Irvine for 36 years, and 31 years ago, when I was 5 years into the ministry, I had a lifesaver like the course you're talking about, John Campbell and Miller Molloy, who worked for the Church of Scotland then. Started a school of mission and evangelism, and we would meet monthly to with other colleagues to do this, looking for perspective, listening intently and intensely to God and to our bodies as well. It was a huge change for me. I started to take my day off much more seriously, and the rhythms of discipleship much more seriously. And that accountability that you're talking about much more seriously. And since then, there have been other courses that have just been just this process that Ascend is encouraging us with, the Church of Scotland and other denominations and churches are encouraging us with, to take the time to listen to daily, of course, as well, but to work into our year, work into our whole approach, this readiness to come aside. To listen as Jesus did with his disciples. He was constantly doing it, wasn't he? Taking them aside to teach, to listen, to look, and then to join in with what he was wanting them to do. So it's hugely encouraging to have you both. And we look forward to hearing more about this Eva. I always need to think about it before I ever say it, because I'm always used to think IWA, was it stand for? Oh, it's a bird, right? Bird's eye view. you've given us, and yet a hands dirty down to earth view as well. It's the Jesus way, isn't it?
Very much so.
Yes,
Lovely.
indeed.
Thanks so much for joining us, and look forward to involving Lindsay in future podcasts as well. Ruth has had to move on to other things. She's doing exciting stuff, which is great, and we wish her well. And I look forward to Lindsay, you joining us in our future podcasts.
Looking
So,
forward to that. Thank you.
indeed, blessings, everybody, and why not share and engage with us? Tell us what you found helpful, unhelpful, what other things you might like us to explore on Emerging Emmaus. Go well, friends. In your neighbourhood, trudge two dumped Jesus friends, drowning before dawning, moving through a maze of misery to an amazing Emmaus encounter. Emerging Emmaus.
Good grief, our dream is dead. Going home instead, comfort of my bed.
Good grief, the pain. Hope hard to sustain, love down the drain.
Good grief, where have you been? What we've seen? Blown to smithereens.
Good grief, how our hearts burned, our minds turned, all we learned.
Good grief, don't go away. Come in to stay. You've shown the way.
Good grief, how he broke the bread with hands that bled, then disappeared.
Good grief, Jesus alive? No need to strive. Chance to thrive. Jesus alive.
Good grief, no time to waste. Now we have a taste. To Jerusalem with haste.
Emerging Emmaus, a well-kent lament echoes through the years. How long? How long? Good as is the grieving process, may it be a means to access visions and dreams of Christ's kingdom come. Emmaus, emerge from the gloom. Come, Holy Spirit, come.
So for future podcasts, join us via the Sanctuary First website, Facebook page and app, and also via Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Come on, tune in.